35-year-old Teresa Lynn Butler was living in the small town of Risco, Missouri, with her husband, Gary Dale Butler, and their two young sons, Gavin and Garrett. Everyone who knew Teresa described her as an incredibly sweet woman with a great big heart, though possibly a little naive about the darker intentions people can often have. Teresa was a hardworking woman, employed at a local Walmart, and a full-time mom, while her husband worked overnight shifts to help support the family. Despite the daily struggle to maintain a balance between work and her home life, Teresa is said to have never lost her happy demeanor and to always have put her children before everything else. On the evening of Tuesday, January 24th, 2006, Teresa spent most of the night with her sister-in-law, chatting and talking about the future. She returned home with her boys that night, looking to put them to bed. Around 10 p.m., she had a phone conversation with a relative, but neither of them knew this would be the last time they would speak. When Dale attempted to call his wife at 11 p.m. just 1 hour later, there was no answer. This wasn't something he was concerned about, as Teresa would sometimes be asleep by the time he called, and on other occasions, the metal shielding of his job site caused interference which didn't allow the calls to get through. Thinking nothing of it, he went back to work. Ending his shift early in the morning, Dale did not go home immediately, but instead met his mother for breakfast. Arriving home at approximately 10 a.m., Dale found his two young sons unattended and in his bedroom. Worried, Dale searched the house for his wife, but when he could find no signs of her, he began placing calls to friends and relatives hoping that they might be able to provide an explanation. It was during this time that Dale discovered several electronic items missing from the home, and though he was now panicked about Teresa's whereabouts, it was Teresa's sister-in-law who notified police. This would later become a point of contention for those who feel that Dale knows more than he's saying about the disappearance of his wife. Police arrived on the scene and soon found themselves confused. There were no signs of forced entry, nor any signs of a struggle to suggest that Teresa was subjected to any kind of violence or abduction. As they searched the home, they would find a key broken off in one of the locks, an unscrewed light bulb on the front porch, and Teresa's wedding rings apparently hidden beneath the couch. Later, DNA was discovered in the home, which did not belong to Dale nor any of Teresa's male relatives. A massive search was conducted in the area around the home and much of the land surrounding local waterways, but no signs of Teresa were ever found. During the course of their investigation, police focused hard on Dale, though they were not able to find any evidence to link him to the crime. Later, they would discover that his previous wife had an alleged vendetta against Teresa and had been making threatening calls to her at work. A tipster came forward a year and a half later and led police to one of the items stolen from the home, a video camera. According to this man, he'd been given the camera as collateral on a drug purchase just days after Teresa had gone missing. Though this opened new avenues for the investigators, they have remained tight-lipped about their investigation into the tipster and the man he identified. What happened to Teresa Lynn Butler? Did this 35-year-old mother of two orchestrate her own disappearance, leaving behind her husband and children? Was she the victim of foul play following a robbery conducted by someone seeking money for drugs? Did her husband Dale play a role in his wife's disappearance, crafting an alibi with an attempted phone call and an early morning breakfast? Or did Dale's ex-wife finally act on her phone threats and abduct and murder Teresa Lynn Butler? This is Trace Evidence, Episode 29, The Disappearance of Teresa Lynn Butler. Welcome to Trace Evidence. I'm your host, Stephen Pacheco. Today's episode examines the disappearance of 35-year-old mother of two, Teresa Lynn Butler, in January of 2006. A bizarre case with very little evidence, Teresa's disappearance is a haunting story full of tragedy and enigmatic clues. Before getting into the case, just a few notes about the show. Trace Evidence is a weekly true crime podcast focused on missing persons and unsolved murders. We are available across multiple platforms and on iTunes, Google Play Music, Stitcher, and many more. Trace Evidence has a Patreon for those of you who wish to support the podcast. It can be found at patreon.com/traceevidence. This podcast is a complete one-man operation, so if you enjoy it and wish to help support it, please check out the Patreon page. I've also set up a one-time PayPal donation link on the main website for those of you who wish to contribute but don't want to use Patreon. Links, information, and more items, including YouTube videos and full episode transcripts, can be found on the website at trace-evidence.com. If you'd like to contact me, you can email me at traceevidencepod@gmail.com. Tweet me at traceevpod, that's TRACEEVPOD. Add me on Instagram at traceevidencepod, or join the Facebook discussion group simply by searching for Trace Evidence Podcast or clicking the direct link on the website. If you have questions, comments, or case suggestions, I'd love to hear from you. As a final note, if you enjoy the show, please rate and review it on whatever app or platform you're listening on. The more ratings and reviews the show gets, the easier it becomes to find the podcast, and the more attention can be given to the cases that I cover. Make sure to stick around at the end of today's episode for a holiday season announcement regarding the show. Today I look into the disappearance of Teresa Lynn Butler. It's a very confusing case that, to my surprise, has received very little coverage in the media. In fact, many of the details of this case are spread extremely thin in the few articles which have been written about it. There's no doubt that the answers to this case are there, but simply haven't yet been discovered, and perhaps more exposure could bring some of the unknown names into the light. This is Episode 29, The Disappearance of Teresa Lynn Butler. Teresa Lynn Butler was born on November 26, 1970, in Gideon, Missouri. Gideon is a very small town located in southeast Missouri on what locals refer to as the Boot Heel. The town boasts a population of just over 1,000 in an area of 1.8 square miles. Teresa was described by many as a shy, extremely loving woman with a tremendously big heart. According to Amy Lacey, a lifelong friend of Teresa's who met her in fourth grade, Teresa was, quote, very generous, kind, and funny. A truly special person, an angel on earth, end quote. Amy constructed a website hoping to generate attention for Teresa's case, and on it she's written a small About Teresa section which reads, quote, I have known Teresa Butler for nearly 28 years. I don't remember how we met, but I do remember becoming good friends in the fourth grade. Teresa was very quiet in school, but she was well-liked. She was voted the most courteous our senior year. She loves her husband very much. Every time we talked, she always spoke of him and her children, of course. Those children were her world. End quote. At the time of her disappearance, on Tuesday, January 24th, 2006, Teresa was 35 years old and living in Risco, Missouri. Risco is even smaller than Teresa's hometown of Gideon, with a population of only 346. Teresa was married to Gary Dale Butler, with whom she had two children, both boys, 4 and 2, at the time of her disappearance. When she was last seen, Teresa was described as being 5'7" tall and weighing approximately 110 pounds. She is Caucasian, with black hair and brown eyes. Her right ear is pierced twice, and her left ear is pierced 3 times. Further description, courtesy of the Charlie Project, says that Teresa has noticeable dimples and a cesarean section scar on her abdomen. Teresa and her family lived off Highway 241, also known as 8 Ditch Road, just off Highway 62. Teresa worked in the photo department at the Walmart in Dexter, located approximately 20 miles from her home. Friend and co-worker Sherry Montgomery said of Teresa, quote, she didn't have an enemy in the world. She was so friendly. We scolded her constantly about how friendly she was to strangers. But that was just Teresa's nature. Very outgoing, very friendly. Always talking about her family and how perfect her marriage was. She loves Dale, and he thinks the world of her. End quote. January 24th, 2006 began as any other day for the family. Teresa had gone into work that day, arrived home later, and prepared dinner for Dale and their two boys, Gavin and Garrett. Teresa took the boys outside and played with them while Dale prepared for work. He was working overnight shifts for Maverick Tube in Blytheville, Arkansas, about 60 miles away from Risco. After Dale left for work at approximately 5 p.m., Teresa went over to her sister-in-law Sarah Buchanan's home. The two spent several hours together, with Sarah following Teresa home that night. She went home with her in order to use her computer for a short period of time. Sarah's married to Teresa's brother Donald. According to Sarah, the visit that day was normal, and there was nothing in particular which stood out to her. Sarah would later state, quote, "We talked about a lot of different things that night. The last thing we spoke about was some gel she wanted to borrow because her face was broken out. I told her I could bring it over, but then she said not to worry and that she'd get it from me the next morning before she went to work." End quote. According to Donald, Sarah arrived home that evening at approximately 9:05 p.m. Sarah had no way of knowing that this would be the last time she'd ever speak to Teresa, and she remains the last person to have seen her alive. Additional records show that Teresa spoke to a relative on the phone at approximately 10 p.m., making this the last confirmed point of contact with her, according to the official timeline. Around 11 p.m., Dale placed a call home during his lunch break, but received no answer. He wasn't generally concerned, as it wasn't out of the ordinary for Teresa to have fallen asleep by that time. When asked about the call later, Dale said, quote, "I tried to call Teresa from work that night at about 11 p.m., but I couldn't reach her. Sometimes it's hard to dial out of Maverick because of all the metal in the building. I tried over and over, but she never answered the phone." End quote. Thinking little of the lack of an answer, Dale went back to work. In the morning, when his shift ended, he didn't go straight home. Instead, he met up with his mother, with whom he had made plans to have breakfast that morning. After breakfast, Dale went home and arrived to a home which didn't outwardly appear to show any signs of distress. The front door was locked when he approached, but upon entering, Dale immediately knew something was wrong. According to him, he quickly found that neither of his sons were in their beds, and there was no sign of Teresa. He went to their bedroom and found both of his sons inside, the oldest being huddled under the covers and the youngest laying on a love seat at the foot of the bed and sucking on the end of an empty bottle while wearing a soiled diaper. Dale would later say, quote, "When I come in, I went into the bedroom and I didn't see Teresa nowhere, and Gavin was all balled up in our blanket. Garrett was on the love seat in a soaked diaper with an empty bottle and was awake, and then I went through the house. I went to the bathroom. I went through the whole house saying, Teresa, Teresa. And then I got on the phone and started calling people, thinking maybe she'd run over here. But she wouldn't have left those kids there alone. No way. Not by themselves." End quote. An interesting point that many have viewed as somewhat controversial is that, despite his level of concern, Dale is not the one who called the police. That call was instead made by Teresa's sister-in-law, Sarah, allegedly after Dale called to ask if she had seen or spoken with Teresa that morning. Many have looked at Dale as a probable suspect in the disappearance of his wife, though authorities have been fairly clear that they do not consider him a suspect. Sheriff Stevens has said on multiple occasions that Dale's alibi for the hours leading up to, during, and after Teresa's disappearance checked out, and that they looked at him thoroughly but do not feel that he played a role. Dale has been very open about the fact that, while he finds it bothersome that people would suspect him, he also understands it, saying, quote, "It's really aggravating that people would make assumptions. I know they're just looking for answers, but we're all looking for answers. Everybody is." End quote. Police arrived on the scene and immediately approached it as a missing persons case, though they weren't yet overly concerned. Risco is a small town, and they felt that Teresa couldn't have gone very far. In their initial search of the home, police did not find anything which led them to believe that they were dealing with foul play. The home was neat and orderly, and they found no signs of a struggle, nor did they find any evidence of blood within the home, and Teresa's Jeep was still parked in the driveway. Investigators found the situation bizarre, as it appeared almost as if Teresa had vanished into thin air. However, further inspection of the house by Dale showed that there were specific items missing from the home. Among the missing items were a PlayStation console and several games, a Nintendo GameCube and several games, a large Maglite flashlight which had previously been kept on the top of a hutch was also missing. In addition to these items, they also found that a video camera and digital camera were missing. Teresa's purse was also missing, along with her cell phone. According to Dale, Teresa was very into photography, and when asked about the digital camera, he said, quote, "Teresa loves to take pictures. Her digital camera is gone, but I think she kept that in her purse, and it's gone too," end quote. The radio was also found to be missing from Teresa's Jeep. What Dale found more disturbing than the items which were missing were the items that were left behind. Teresa had left behind a leather jacket which, according to Dale, she wore everywhere. In addition to this, her wedding rings were found beneath the couch. Dale has said that Teresa never took her rings off unless she was preparing to go to bed, and she certainly wouldn't have just thrown them on the floor near the couch. Police took possession of the rings along with several furniture covers from the home. There is one very odd item which police are noted to have taken. A lock to the home was found with the tip of a key broken off inside of it. Police removed the lock and added it to their small collection of evidence. To this date, authorities have never confirmed which door the lock was taken from, nor whether or not the key that was broken off inside the lock belonged to the home, or perhaps was Teresa's own key. Interestingly, in a statement Dale later made to the media, he revealed that authorities had recovered foreign DNA inside the home. When asked about this, he stated, quote, "I don't know if it's hair, saliva, blood, or what. They swabbed me and Teresa's brother, but she was always cutting people's hair here and that kind of thing. It's all very frustrating," end quote. Police began to surmise the possibility that Teresa may have been the victim of a home invasion robbery and was either taken by the thieves or had fled and was lost somewhere. The items which were missing from her home, authorities felt, didn't suggest a professional job and, in their opinion, pointed towards the possibility of a less experienced thief or perhaps an even younger individual. All of the items were small, easily recognizable electronics which would be easy to pawn without many questions being asked. Large items of value were left behind in the home, and if indeed this was a case of robbery, the suspects must have arrived with their own transportation and chosen not to steal Teresa's Jeep. This, of course, led investigators down several different paths of possibility as to what could have happened to Teresa. It seemed unlikely that someone would have abducted her, considering the minor electronics stolen, and the lack of a struggle or signs of forced entry led them to believe it was possible that Teresa either knew the intruder or had gone along without putting up a fight. Further investigation found that the light bulb had been unscrewed on the front porch, making it difficult for Teresa to have visually identified the individual who may have knocked on her door that night or during the early morning hours. When Dale arrived home, he found the doors all locked. The last confirmed contact with Teresa had been the previous night when she had a phone call at 10 p.m. Dale had tried to reach Teresa an hour later at 11 p.m., though he was unable to get in touch with her. There is some debate about whether or not the calls failed to be answered due to Teresa having been abducted at this time, or if, as Dale has previously stated, the calls failed due to the metal infrastructure of his place of business. This led investigators to wonder if Teresa had a run-in with someone between 10 and 11 p.m., or if whatever led to her disappearance had happened later. Without much evidence, it was difficult for them to verify any official time at which they believed Teresa vanished. Investigators pulled Teresa's cell phone records and found that, after she was last confirmed to be alive at 10 p.m., there were two calls made from her phone. The first call went out at 3:16 a.m. and was to a phone number in Gideon, Teresa's hometown. When authorities contacted the man whose number had been called, he stated that he'd never heard his phone ring that early morning and only noticed he had a missed call when he looked at his phone later. Investigators looked into any possible connections, but ultimately ruled out the possibility that the man was involved. They asked the family about the man, though no one seemed to know who he was. Teresa's sister-in-law, Sarah, would later say, quote, "We called the number, and the man who answered said his telephone didn't ring, but he later saw that a call had come in. He doesn't know Teresa or any of the family, and we don't know him." End quote. A second call was placed to a residence in Clarkton, Missouri, after Teresa vanished. New Madrid County Sheriff Terry M. Stevens, when asked about the second call, replied, quote, "We contacted the number. It was two elderly ladies who live together, widow women, who basically take care of each other. The lady said she answered the phone, said hello a couple of times. There was nothing on the other end that she could hear, so she hung up. She has no idea who the Butler or Buchanan families are, so we don't know what to make of that." End quote. An interesting thing to note is that Risco, Gideon, and Clarkton, Missouri are all in the same county and share the same area code, 543, which has led many to believe that the phone calls were not made at random. Some have suggested that Teresa dialed these numbers herself, but for one reason or another misdialed and reached these two strangers. Others believe that the calls may have been placed by someone who was involved in Teresa's abduction, and that the yet unidentified suspect may have misdialed. The calls themselves are yet another set of strange details which have never been figured out in this case. The location of the Butler home is just across the street from the number 8 drainage ditch. In their initial search efforts, the drainage ditch became an early point of focus. Sheriff Stevens stated, quote, "We didn't actually drag the ditch, we floated it. The 8 ditch is pretty well maintained with a low level of water in it. We feel pretty confident that if she was there, we would have found her. We floated several area ditches there around the Risco-Malden area and east of the Risco area also. We ran four-wheelers up and down the ditch dumps and through all the fields and field rows. We flew an airplane, flew a helicopter. Some private people ran some horses, but they were not under my guidance. We even brought in cadaver dogs. Nothing." End quote. Jim Duck of Outback Riders, a nonprofit search and rescue organization, has been involved in more than a dozen searches which have been conducted for Teresa. According to Duck, they initially began working alongside law enforcement, but that when the official search was called off, the family requested that he and his team continue looking. There are some points of contention in regard to the searching, with Teresa's family feeling that authorities stopped searching too early, while investigators felt that they had searched extensively and come up with nothing to lead them to believe that further searches might merit better results. Jim Duck would later state, quote, "After a couple of times of going out, officers involved with the case felt like the leads we all hoped for weren't turning up. Teresa's parents asked us to keep searching whenever we could. So that's what we've done. As for actually finding evidence, no. No stolen articles, no clothes, no nothing. As for now, we're shut down." End quote. In their desperation for answers, Teresa's family turned to Carol Pate, an alleged psychic. According to Pate, she held Teresa's photo in her hand and, after a period of time, was able to tune into Teresa's energy. What details she may have revealed are unknown, though she confirmed that she was very upfront with the family and told them everything that she had seen and experienced. Teresa's brother, Don, later said, quote, "We gave police a lot of information. So far, we've gotten very little response. I got pretty mad at some of them and told them just what I thought. This is very hard on me and my wife. She's been in and out of the hospital since Teresa disappeared. We were comforted by what Carol Pate told us. She was professional and believable." End quote. While the family were struggling to find any answers that may lead them to Teresa, investigators were digging into her life. Teresa was described as the kind of woman who had no enemies, but authorities found some evidence to suggest that there may be at least one person who had a grudge against the young mother. Gary's ex-wife is reported to have made several phone calls to Teresa at work. His ex also works at Walmart, though in the town of Kennett. Peggy Clopton, a friend of Teresa's, mentioned that she'd heard about the phone calls. She later said, quote, "The only thing I can remember Teresa talking to me about was Dale's ex-wife. That's the only thing she ever said, that she would be calling her at Walmart or whatever. I'm not going to say she was harassing her, because she never got into what was being said, but she called her enough to make her uncomfortable. End quote. Teresa's father didn't pull any punches on the subject, and confirmed that Teresa felt she was being harassed by Dale's ex-wife. Strangely, when asked about this, Dale said, quote, "Everybody is getting along just fine. Teresa is as much a mother to my older son as she is to our two sons." End quote. Many people suspect that Dale's ex-wife was involved in Teresa's disappearance, though no evidence has been found to solidify this link. Several articles have pointed out that on January 20th, 2006, just 5 days before Teresa vanished, the ex-wife's then-current husband filed for divorce. Many have used this as an indication that the ex-wife may have felt angry, hurt, or desperate, and chose to target Teresa for one reason or another. The depths of whatever issues existed between the two remains a mystery, one which Dale has been quickly dismissive of. Whether or not Dale's ex-wife played a part in Teresa's disappearance can't be known for sure, and authorities have been fairly tight-lipped about any aspect of her possible involvement that they have examined. Another strange detail of this case is a letter, which is alleged to exist. According to several statements made by Dale, his mother received a letter that has some bearing on the case, and yet, 11 years later, the contents of this letter have never been revealed to the public, only adding speculation to a terribly tragic story with too many unanswered questions. Days began to change into weeks, and weeks into months, and yet there was no new evidence nor sightings of Teresa. 4 months after her disappearance, Sheriff Stevens stated publicly for the first time that he believed foul play was involved in Teresa's vanishing. He went so far as to not only suggest it, but to state that he was positive of it. When asked if it were possible that Teresa's children may have witnessed what happened to their mother, Stevens stated, quote, "If they have any answers, I feel like they're not capable of verbalizing them to us. I'm still optimistic we're going to resolve this." End quote. Dale, along with Teresa's family, made several public pleas in hopes that someone would come forward with their answers. Teresa's mother, Linda, stated in an interview, quote, "She's gone. That's why it's so hard. Wondering where her little body is and what's become of her. She would not leave them babies by themselves. I know Teresa. I used to go down there every other night to talk to her and visit. I miss that. I'll never spend another Christmas with Teresa, ever." End quote. The family, overall, felt very frustrated by the lack of media attention that Teresa's disappearance drew. A family friend later stated, quote, "We contacted Fox News, CNN, every show you can think of. One time we thought Montel was coming, and then he got a bigger story. Teresa don't have any money. She's from a poor area. But to us, she's just as important." End quote. Since the initial days of Teresa's disappearance, police received hundreds of tips and reported sightings. One of those sightings suggested that a woman, who resembled Teresa, was seen at a local gas station, seeming disoriented and wearing a black coat. Police were unable to verify the identity of the woman, and a surveillance video which captured her was not clear enough to make room for a positive identification. Then, a year and a half after she vanished, police received a tip which actually led to the discovery of a new piece of evidence. A local drug dealer contacted authorities and informed them that he'd been given a camcorder in place of money he was owed. According to this individual, he received the video camera within 24 hours of Teresa's disappearance and, upon viewing the tape inside the camera, he realized it was connected to the case. Interestingly, the man did not hand the camcorder to the police at the time that he received it. Somehow, it isn't made clear in discussions of the case, they were told where to find it, dumped in a ditch between Risco and Malden. When asked about the recovery of the camera, Sheriff Stevens said, quote, "Through the investigation, we interviewed an individual who told us a story about exchanging some illegal drugs for a camcorder, and they had viewed the contents of the camcorder after they got it, and realized that it belonged to the girl that was missing from Risco, in their words." End quote. By the time police retrieved the camera, there was no longer a tape inside, and the serial number was no longer legible, making it impossible to completely verify that it was the same camera that had been stolen from the Butler home. When pressed further on the person who led them to the camera, Sheriff Stevens replied, quote, "He is a suspect, and we have pursued that person, talked to that person, and interviewed him. But we can't hang our hat on what we know just yet. We do have a couple of more suspects. We're not eliminating anybody at this point in the game." End quote. Out of this lead developed the possibility that the robbery of the home had been done in order to gather money for a drug deal. Sheriff Stevens has hinted that there could be a connection between Teresa's disappearance and either the drug dealer himself or individuals with whom he was conducting business. In a different interview, Stevens revealed some information which seems to suggest that, at the current time, authorities believe that Teresa had spent time in her home with the person or persons who had robbed her of the items and likely abducted her. When asked about finding Teresa's rings under the couch, Stevens said, quote, "Possibly the people she was interacting with she didn't feel completely comfortable with, so she may have been securing them in her own way." End quote. Dale, when asked about the possibility of this being related to a break-in, simply responded, quote, "I don't think somebody broke in. I think somebody, somehow, they got in." End quote. Lead investigator Chris Hensley said they'd been trying to connect the crime to others with a similar nature, and pointed out the unscrewed light bulb as a possible key piece of evidence. Hensley stated, quote, "You know, we had the light bulb that was unscrewed as to not illuminate the porch where, if somebody was driving by, they couldn't see anybody coming or going to the residence. You know, if that is his MO to do that, that is one of the things we've been looking for, is other burglaries where the light bulb has been unscrewed." End quote. In the over 11 years since Teresa Butler vanished from her home, very little information has been found to provide any hope of solving this case. Her family has struggled trying to understand what could have happened to her, and over all this time, while some new evidence has come to the surface, there are persons of interest, there still have been no leads which have led anyone to Teresa's remains or possible whereabouts. In a case such as this, with so many strange details all pointing in different directions, there are, of course, several theories which have been put forth by the family, the police, and uninvolved investigators. The first of these theories, as always, is that Teresa fled of her own volition. This theory has a few different forks to it, with some believing that Teresa chose to flee and the robbery which took place is unrelated. Others feel that Teresa may have fled from the intruders and gotten lost or injured and was unable to make it home, and some still have suggested that Teresa may have been involved in some kind of illegal activity with or knew the people who came to her home that night and made the choice to go with them. For all of these branches of the theory, proponents point out the lack of a struggle and absence of any signs of bodily harm nor forced entry. Though Teresa defined her life as happy and her marriage as perfect, some continue to believe that she may have been hoping to escape and use this particular time as her opportunity to do so. Whether or not Teresa was happy leads to another theory. Many have theorized since the early breaking hours of this story that Teresa's husband Gary Dale Butler may have been involved in the disappearance of his wife. Although authorities have stated that Dale's alibi checked out and that they don't consider him a suspect, others have felt that his behavior in the hours surrounding her disappearance is odd. For many, they believe that having breakfast with his mother was his attempt to develop an alibi, as was making a phone call to Teresa the night she vanished. In addition to that, many believe that the lack of forced entry suggests that the possible abductor had a key, and the lack of signs of a struggle leads them to believe that Teresa may have gone along willingly with her abductor or murderer because it was someone she trusted. And who would she trust more than her own husband? They also point out that, though Dale listed items which had been stolen from the home, none have ever been found and verified, leaving some to suggest that the entire story of the robbery could have been made up. One of the more popular theories in this case is that Teresa was abducted and/or murdered by one or more persons who had the intent to rob her home. If indeed the items listed were stolen from her home and Teresa's Jeep was missing its radio, many believe it's entirely possible that the individuals involved may have taken Teresa with them so that she couldn't identify them to police. This is a controversial theory, as such a small amount of items stolen doesn't seem like the kind of crime which necessitates abduction and murder. But it's also been pointed out that if indeed the robbery was conducted with a connection to drugs, it's hard to know how clear-thinking the person or persons involved may have been. As a sort of tie-in to the robbery, the final theory suggests that abduction was always the intent, and that the items taken from the home were an afterthought. Many have pointed to the broken key in the door lock as evidence that someone was trying to gain entry to the home that night, and it's speculated that Teresa heard the sound of a key in the lock and assumed it was her husband or a family member, and opened the door, which led to her abductor entering. Teresa's purse and cell phone were missing, and some believe that this is because the abductor allowed her to take these items under the guise that he was going to bring her to an ATM from which he wanted cash. Others suggest that the rings being found under the couch was an emergency signal that Teresa sent out so that when they were found, her family and authorities would know that something was very wrong. It's been over 11 years since Teresa Lynn Butler vanished from her home sometime between 10 p.m. and 10 a.m. Somewhere in those 12 hours, the 35-year-old wife, daughter, sister, and mother of two seemingly vanished without a hint as to what could have happened to her. As the years have rolled forward, her family has continued to maintain hope that someday they may have the answers, and that Teresa may be found alive, or that they could recover her remains. A beautiful young woman living in a small town not too far from where she grew up, Teresa was a kind woman with a big heart and an endless love for her family. What was it that led to this complex mystery, and how have those involved managed to avoid capture for all of these years? Someone out there knows exactly what happened to Teresa Butler. Perhaps that person is even listening right now. As technology advances and criminal investigative skills sharpen, we can only hope that new evidence may come to light and Teresa Butler's fate will finally be revealed so that her family may find comfort and closure in that likely grim revelation. The disappearance of Teresa Lynn Butler is absolutely bizarre. A young mother, known to be home with her two small children, who meant the world to her, seemingly vanished into thin air. The evidence, little as there may be, depicts a story which doesn't make a great deal of sense. In the 11 years since she vanished, very little new information has come to the surface. At least that is, information which has been shared publicly. While some new details have offered more specificity about possibilities, no arrests nor discoveries have been made, and Teresa's fate remains a haunting mystery. Her family has struggled over the years to come to grips with the likelihood that Teresa will never come home, and her two young sons have grown up without the mother who so deeply loved them. Before moving into the theories, I wanted to address some information about Teresa herself. Typically, when I research an episode, I like to get a lot of background information about the victim. In this case, that proved to be incredibly challenging. Very little information about Teresa exists outside of the details of her disappearance. I felt this was an important case to cover, and one which frustrates me to no end, but I also knew that I wouldn't be able to deliver a great deal of information about who Teresa truly was. From everything I've read, Teresa was a sincere woman with a heart of gold, who loved her children and her husband, the kind of woman who would have done whatever she could to help you without thinking twice. I've not found anyone who had a negative word to say about her, which only makes the circumstances of her disappearance all the more frustrating and tragic. As mysterious as this case has been, of course there are those who have developed theories about it. With the evidence so sparse and Teresa's movements on the night of her disappearance being essentially uncounted for, many have developed theories which consider what might have occurred that night, though there is nothing which can solidify any of these theories. Investigators on the case have been frustrated from the first day, trying desperately to wrap their heads around what could possibly have occurred that resulted in the inexplicable disappearance of a young mother from her own home. As is often the case when it comes to the unexplained disappearance of an adult, the first theory examines the possibility that Teresa Butler chose to leave, and that her disappearance is not something that happened to her, but something she planned and executed herself. This theory finds its basis in the absolute lack of evidence found in the home itself. Teresa was last confirmed to be alive and home at approximately 10 p.m. When her husband placed a call an hour later, there was no answer, though even Dallas stated it's possible that the call was hindered by his location. Either way, sometime between the hours of 10 p.m. and 10 a.m., Teresa vanished. We know from investigators that there were no signs of a struggle in the home, there were no signs of forced entry, and there was nothing to suggest that Teresa was met with violence. Things become a little confusing here, because we have the knowledge that a key was found broken off in a lock, but we're never told for certain which door that key was found in. Later on, Dale said in an interview that foreign DNA was found in the home, but we're never told exactly what was found, be it blood or something else. We're essentially left with a 12-hour window, during which time Teresa ultimately disappears. For many, the lack of evidence linking this to some kind of crime or violent situation opens the door to the possibility that Teresa chose to leave. There are a lot of questions that could be answered were this the case, though it seems unlikely that this is what would happen. First and foremost, Teresa loved her children more than anything in the world, and even if she had elected to leave them behind, which seems ridiculously unlikely, it's hard to imagine that she would have abandoned them in an empty house where she knew they would be unattended for some period of time. I have a very hard time imagining that Teresa would just leave the boys, who were then 2 and 4 years old. We also know that Teresa's Jeep was left behind. So if she did leave of her own volition, how exactly did she get away? Short of walking, which seems extremely unlikely, someone else would have either had to have loaned her a vehicle or have given her a ride, and there's never been any evidence to suggest this was the case. On top of that, none of Teresa's personal belongings were missing from the home. All of her clothes, including the jacket she's said to have worn everywhere, and her jewelry were left behind, including her wedding rings which were found under the couch. The rings have been the object of speculation for a long time, with many feeling that this was Teresa attempting to transmit a message of danger, while others believe that she simply took off her rings and dropped them on the floor accidentally. Others, though, have looked at her abandoned rings as Teresa sending the message that she was leaving and she was done with the marriage. Although that's possible, it seems more likely that if Teresa wanted to deliver that message, she would have left her rings in a more obvious location where Dale was sure to find them and get that message, not hidden away under the couch. It's been over 11 years since Teresa vanished, and unless she had some kind of a way of avoiding detection and starting a new life with false documentation, it seems extremely unlikely to me that this disappearance was of her own choice. When you factor in how difficult it is to choose to disappear in this day and age, her two sons who she loved so much, and even her husband Dale, who she said was the perfect husband, there doesn't appear to be a great deal of information here to support this theory. It's simply not possible to rule this out, but when weighed against what information we do have about Teresa, the state of the home as it was found the next day, and the sheer lack of any information over the past 11 years to even suggest the possibility that Teresa is out there somewhere, I find it very difficult to believe she would have chosen to leave on her own, and I believe that if she did, she would never have left her children behind to fend for themselves for hours. One of the more popular theories out there is that Teresa was abducted and murdered either by her husband or someone her husband knew. Their marriage is often described as being loving, with Teresa alleged to have told many friends that the relationship was perfect. Some have considered the possibility that Teresa was unhappy, and that she simply lied to friends and family in order to not face the embarrassment of admitting that things weren't going well. All of that can only be considered speculation, and there's very little which exists to suggest that their marriage was anything other than happy. In a situation like this, when a wife disappears, the spouse is almost always the first suspect. In the case of Teresa and Dale, Dale was intensely scrutinized by authorities. He's admitted to being questioned for hours and has even expressed his frustration with how hard he was focused on. It isn't out of the ordinary in the slightest for police to heavily investigate the husband. After all was said and done, investigators were very clear about the fact that they did not consider Dale a suspect, and it's an avenue of this investigation that, from all we know, they have never returned to. They felt they cleared him, his alibi checked out, and they had no information which would lead them to believe he played a role in the crime. Despite their insistence, there are those who feel that Dale may know more about the disappearance of his wife than he's letting on. There's a theory that Dale's alibi was something he carefully constructed, either because he was planning to do something to Teresa, or because he knew something was going to happen to her. Many think that the call he placed at 11 p.m. on the night of her disappearance was done so in order to establish an electronic trail so that his story could be confirmed. The idea that he was having breakfast with his mother the next morning, some have argued, was done so to ensure enough time passing to allow someone else to abduct Teresa and to grant this person enough time to get away before authorities were notified. There's also the strange detail about his mother receiving a letter with details about the case, but that letter has never been made public. In addition to this, we know it wasn't Dale who called the police that morning, which many people think is strange in and of itself. Whether or not Dale was involved, it's impossible to say. And while I completely understand the notion that the husband had to play a role in this, there's really nothing to point to it outside of some details which may or may not be suspicious, depending on your point of view. If Dale was involved, then he managed to pull this off flawlessly, as there's never been anything discovered that puts him in the suspect category. After Teresa's disappearance, Dale struggled to support his sons and to maintain the home. His family was heavily involved in assisting with his issues, and to me, this is not the kind of lifestyle that would be lived by a man who wanted his wife gone and played a role in ensuring that it happened. It's easy to say that his behavior was strange in the hours surrounding Teresa's disappearance, but according to much of what I've read, it was extremely common for Dale to call Teresa from work at that time, and it certainly wasn't the first time he'd arranged to have breakfast with his mother. Some have even gone so far as to say that the items Dale listed as being stolen from the house were never confirmed to have been there in the first place. But we know for a fact that Teresa's Jeep was missing its radio. Wouldn't Dale, if his plan was to list some stolen items to solidify a theory of a break-in, have maybe listed things with a little more value to make the story believable? It's hard to imagine a home invasion in which all they steal are a handful of minor electronics and not anything which carries major value. There just isn't enough for me to believe Dale was involved. His life has been a disaster in the years since Teresa disappeared, and he has reaped no benefits or rewards from it. An interesting aspect of this theory is Dale's ex-wife, who, from everything we're told, did not have a good relationship with Teresa and was alleged to have made threatening phone calls to her at work. Many believe she may be the key to solving this case. Dale, when asked about it, has said that everything was fine between the two of them, but many of Teresa's co-workers, and even her own father, have said that Teresa was upset and made very uncomfortable by the calls. Just 5 days before Teresa vanished, the ex-wife was notified that her new husband had filed for divorce. To many, this could have been something which caused her to snap and made her act on a plan to get rid of Teresa. The lack of signs of a struggle in the home, coupled with the fact that Teresa's purse was also taken, have made many believe that whoever was involved may have been somehow someone she knew, and that she may have gone along willingly. Again, the problem I have with this is that Teresa would not have left the boys behind. But what if the children were threatened? It isn't hard to imagine that Teresa would have gone along to protect them. Many people believe that Dale's ex-wife may have been involved, and either Dale knows this, or simply doesn't consider it likely. Authorities dug into her pretty deep, though. They have never come forward and presented any evidence to connect her to this crime. It's certainly possible, but again, there just isn't enough evidence to say it with certainty. The final theories follow the thought process that Teresa was victim to a home invasion, and either she was taken or fled from the scene. We know that items that were listed as stolen from the home, though none of the items were what you'd expect an experienced thief to take. Everything taken was a smaller electronic, easy to be carried out, and things which could be pawned off or sold fairly quickly, with few questions asked. Video game consoles and cameras, for instance. Larger items were left behind, jewelry wasn't taken, nothing that would suggest that this was a planned-out robbery with a larger target in mind. Teresa's Jeep was left behind, though the stereo was stolen from it, which suggests that whoever was involved had their own transportation. There are several details of the home which are curious under the circumstances of a home invasion, mainly that there were no signs of a struggle inside the home and it wasn't ransacked. Dale did not return home to find the house in horrible shape as though someone had been going through it haphazardly and searching for anything in particular to steal. Those items which were taken were essentially in plain view when entering the home. The light bulb was unscrewed from the front porch, making it easier for someone to knock on the door in the middle of the night without being seen. And if Teresa had flipped the switch, there'd be no light to give her a better impression of who was there. What's curious about this detail is that, when Dale returned, he entered the home through the front door, which seems to indicate that this was not the door that a key was broken off in. Why unscrew the light to the front porch if that's not your point of entry? The broken key is very strange, and I did read one theory in which theorists suggested that the key may have been an attempt to break in, or it may have been used to convince Teresa that it was her husband so that she would open a door. How many times have you lived with someone else, and you hear them struggling with the key in the door, so you just go and unlock it for them? It's definitely a possibility, but I've always been confused about the key in one door and the light unscrewed from the front porch. Could there have been more than one person at both doors at the same time? It's certainly possible. Then again, the unscrewing of the light bulb could have been done to conceal removing Teresa from the home. The intruder theory has several different aspects to it. The first is that Teresa simply happened to be home when a person or persons chose to rob it. From this possibility, there are two different belief structures: that Teresa may have been abducted by these robbers, or that she fled from the home and became lost, injured, or even died in her escape attempt. I don't think there's a great deal of consideration to be given to the possibility that Teresa fled and was somehow lost out there. She lived in that home, she knew the area, and it doesn't make much sense that she would have escaped from her home and disappeared. In connection with that, Teresa, again, seems unlikely to have fled her home and left her two young sons with dangerous people. Though it's possible, I consider this option extremely slim. So that leaves the other option: that Teresa was abducted by the person or persons who broke into the home that night, or perhaps who Teresa allowed into the home. There's been a lot of debate about whether or not Teresa may have known her abductors, and if it's possible that she let them inside not knowing what they were planning. The sheriff has said that Teresa may have taken off her rings when she realized that the people whose company she was in may be dangerous, and dropped them to hide them as a signal that she was in danger. It's impossible to know for sure, but considering the lack of forced entry, it isn't unlikely that either Teresa knew her abductors or was tricked into letting them inside. Though if it were the latter, I'd have to believe there would have been some kind of a struggle. Teresa's purse was also found to be missing, which many believe suggests that she may have been taken by someone and told to bring her purse along so that they could drive her to an ATM and have her withdraw money. When you look at the insignificant items which were stolen from the home, it's certainly possible that the abductors wanted more, and perhaps that's why they didn't take more expensive items, because they thought it'd be better to just get cash. According to investigators, though, there's no evidence which shows any withdrawals that night or the next morning. So why was Teresa allowed to bring her purse along, or was it even her choice? It's entirely possible that her purse was in plain sight, and one of the robbers may have simply grabbed it, though it seems more likely that he would have just taken the wallet out of it and not the entire purse itself, but that's purely speculative. If indeed Teresa was abducted, then whoever took her must have had some place to hide her, or if they murdered her, to conceal her body where still, 11 years later, it's never been found. The most significant pieces of evidence we have, which points to a likely robbery followed by an abduction, comes from a tipster who told police that, in exchange for drugs, he was given a video camera which, at the time, contained footage that he believed belonged to Teresa and her family. He told the police where to find it and who he received it from. This is the first and only acknowledgement that has ever been made, which lends credence to the home invasion theory and also brings in more than one suspect. Authorities have stated that they consider the tipster, along with the other person named, as suspects in the robbery and possible murder of Teresa Butler. They have never released the names and have said that they don't have enough evidence to levy any charges at this time. To me, this is the most probable outcome in this case: that Teresa was abducted by one or more persons and ultimately murdered. The connection to drugs makes me feel like it's possible that the crime was committed by one or more persons who may have either been under the influence or desperate to get a fix. I think it's entirely possible that there was no struggle because Teresa, being the kind of person that she is, offered to go along with them in order to get them money in an attempt to get them out of the house where her children were asleep in their bedrooms, and became the victim of foul play following this. That's purely speculation on my part, but it's hard to imagine any other scenario in which a break-in occurred and yet there was nothing to indicate a break-in or ransacking of the home. The only other possibility is that Teresa may have known one of the attempted robbers and let him or her in without thinking twice about it. I do believe that Teresa was abducted by whoever stole the items from the home, and unfortunately, I agree with authorities that it is most likely that she was murdered by these same individuals. Teresa Lynn Butler vanished from her Risco, Missouri home on Tuesday, January 24, 2006. Aside from multiple items which appear to have been taken from the home, and a key broken off in a door lock, there's very little evidence discovered that could make any sense of this mystery. 11 years later, and there are persons of interest, yet still not enough evidence to charge them with any particular crime. In the years that have passed, Teresa's family have tried to move forward with their lives, but they will forever be haunted by the question of what happened to their daughter, sister, wife, and mother. Her two boys, who were 2 and 4 when she vanished, are now 13 and 15. Dale has had a long roller coaster ride of ups and downs, struggling to be a single father under such tragic circumstances. What happened to Teresa Lynn Butler, the kind, sweet, and loving 35-year-old mother of two, who simply vanished between 10 p.m. and 10 a.m.? Authorities are still actively investigating the case, though tips and leads have become fewer and fewer over the years. Hopefully someday, the answers will be found, and Teresa's friends and family can have some form of closure, and perhaps even the opportunity to face those responsible and to lay Teresa's remains to rest.
Case update. Melvin Ray Hufford, a person of interest in Teresa's case from early on, was arrested in November of 2019, charged with first-degree involuntary manslaughter and tampering with physical evidence in a felony prosecution. New Madrid County Sheriff Terry Stevens told the press, quote, "It is satisfying to file charges in the case, but our initial goal was to bring Teresa home safely. That isn't going to happen, so we can at least know that we have someone charged and there is some accountability for her death," end quote. Hufford confessed to authorities, describing what had happened the night Teresa vanished. According to his story, he, Teresa, and a third man were doing methamphetamine together. Hufford claims that after injecting himself and Teresa with meth, that she began to complain of chest pains. Hufford went on to explain that he went to get Teresa a glass of water, and by the time he returned, she was unconscious and non-responsive. Hufford checked her pulse, and there was none, at which point he and the other male became frightened. Hufford alleged that after this, he wrapped Teresa in a tarp and took her out of her home. To cover up their trail, he and the other man began taking random items from the home to make it look like a robbery. Hufford said that he took Teresa's body, placed it in the abandoned home of his father, and left it there for several years while he went away to prison for unrelated crimes. At some point, Hufford wrote to his father and asked him about the body in the home. Hufford's father later confirmed that he had in fact seen Teresa's remains. After being released, Hufford went back to the home and recovered Teresa's remains, at which time he placed them in a pit and set them ablaze. After the fire was out, he crushed the bones and placed them in a bucket, dumping them in a ditch. Police did locate and speak to the second man that Hufford claimed was present at the time, though authorities do not believe the man was there and think Hufford was trying to buy himself a deal. Ultimately, Hufford faced charges alone. Hufford pled guilty and was sentenced to 7 years for the Class C felony of manslaughter for injecting the fatal dose of meth and 3 years for a Class D felony for tampering with evidence for moving her body. In total, Hufford will spend 10 years in prison. Sheriff Stevens later commented, quote, "I'm somewhat disappointed in the amount of time he received, but I understand that was the best we were going to get, so I'm satisfied with it," end quote. While Teresa's case has been apparently closed following Hufford's incarceration, her family is left without a body to bury or mourn. There are still some, though, who believe there's more to the story than what Hufford confessed to. Perhaps we will find out someday.
If you're interested in finding more information about the disappearance of Teresa Lynn Butler, there are several news articles and websites which discuss her case. If you have information about what happened to Teresa Butler, please contact the FBI or your local police. What do you believe happened to Teresa Lynn Butler? Tweet me at TraceEvPod, email me at TraceEvidencePod@gmail.com, or comment in the Facebook group. Today's episode will be the last episode of Trace Evidence released this year. I'm going to take the holiday season off to focus on friends and family, while also developing new episodes for our return in January. I want to thank all of you for your tremendous support over these past 7 months. I launched Trace Evidence in May, and since then it's been a total whirlwind, with so many of you providing amazing commentary, theories, and case suggestions. Over the course of the next few weeks, I'll be writing and developing new episodes, as well as making some changes to the website. I'd like to release a special question and answer episode for you closer to the end of the year, so if you have questions, please email them to me, tweet me, or comment in the Facebook group. Thank you all for your amazing support, and I can't wait to release new episodes in just a few weeks. I want to wish you all a very happy holiday season and a wonderful new year. If you'd like to support Trace Evidence, please visit the Patreon page located at patreon.com/traceevidence. I want to thank you for listening to this episode of Trace Evidence and invite you to check out our website at trace-evidence.com. You can find links to the Patreon, social media accounts, as well as places to go to download the podcast and subscribe. I'm always eager to hear your feedback. If you enjoyed this episode, please give us a good rating on iTunes and leave us a review. This will greatly help our reach and bring more attention to the cases I cover. Thank you all for listening, and I hope you'll join me in January for another unsolved crime on the next episode of Trace Evidence.